Hello everyone, greetings from London. I'm sorry I can't join you today, but I did want to join you at least in spirit and offer some recollections of Laura and, you know, a celebration of her life with some memories. So the first time I recall ever seeing Laura, which was sometime back in early 1991, she was sitting at one of the cubicle desks in the tiny windowless room that was the inauspicious little lab space of my PhD advisor and Laura's co-advisor, Paul Bloom. And this was in the psychology department at the University of Arizona. And as I recall, Laura was wearing a black rah-rah skirt, some kind of crocheted knit jumper, and lace-up Oxfords with ankle socks. And she turned to me from whatever task she was, like, Laura level, intensely focused on, smiled shyly and said, "Hi." And I was immediately struck by her. There was the wonderful gap-toothed smile that just gave you warmth, the long blonde hair and the cool shoes. And we exchanged a few words and very quickly I thought to myself, oh, I really, really hope this person will want to be my friend. As a foreign student and a recent arrival from England to Tucson, I didn't know many Americans, only foreign students who, like me, were all stumbling about, desperately trying to acclimatize to American Southwest norms. And sadly, as I quickly found out, Laura really wasn't in need of any extra new friends. She was a homegrown Tucsonan, a University of Arizona faculty kid, so she was a serious insider. And she already had high school friends and U of A undergraduate friends and now grad school linguistics friends. And furthermore, she was always, always in motion, caring for her horses, going on long runs, zipping back and forth to her parents' house to do often very obscure to me things, but clearly very, very important things that she was doing. So she was always in motion and she was culturally inscrutable to me, always busy. And she ate so much canned soup. But intuitively, I knew this person is so special. She's so weird and so wonderful. And gosh, I really want to be in her life. And gradually in the lab, I wore her down and we did. We became friends. And it really is one of the great fortunes of my life that Laura Conway and I became friends. And it wasn't just a glancing, superficial friendship. Laura, with her unaffected and incredibly kind nature, generously invited me into her entire life and thus into the life of Marcus and Bill and Will, sometimes if we saw him, and the extended Conway family, including Granny and Grandma. And Laura's flatmate, Beth, had moved out of their apartment in this 1950s complex called the Diplomats, which was this joyous haven full of linguistics grad students that existed in a no man's land behind a biker bar and a stripper joint on Speedway Boulevard. And when Beth moved out, I got to move in with Laura. So we got to be flatmates. And I'd grown up riding horses, although with absolutely none of Laura's amazing accomplishment and panache. And so we would spend part of the weekend at her parents' place, tending to Jenny and Pride, the horses, taking long horse rides in the wash, being followed by coyotes, grabbing quick dinners with her folks. And Laura, like me, loved music, especially the local Tucson bands she loved, like the Desert Roses and the Phantom Limbs. And we would go to Club Congress to see bands or head to a nightclub to dance. And as you probably all know, Laura so loved to dance. Laura dancing was the epitome of joy. I have a vision in my head of her shaking her stuff in our apartment while decked out in these regular, like, stonewashed denim shorts, but she donned these high heels so she could momentarily pretend to be like a proper girly girl, although she could actually do girly girl when she felt like she really wanted to. And all of this was occurring against this backdrop of really serious accomplishment. Laura had written and been awarded a rare but highly prestigious National Science Foundation graduate fellowship. And she took all the precision that she'd developed through her ability and keen love of math and instead injected it into her study of young children's developing grammatical understanding. And she was just a really creative scholar and also a really highly disciplined scholar and a perfectionist. And so the puzzles of her language acquisition work created really deep satisfaction for her, but also its fair share of angst. An angst that was part of the underlying complexity of her nature and actually on full display in her amazing and slightly devastating oil paintings. And no, she didn't know where the fierceness and the violence in them came from either. But I have to say, I just so loved her for them and for what they said about her. She was a natural teacher. Her beautiful, careful Laura hands gesturing and cradling ideas as she explained abstract linguistic concepts like referential deixis to me. She was almost conjuring the concepts with her hands and with her meticulously chosen words. She managed to make the ideas real and accessible and a teaching skill. I don't think anyone's in any doubt about that. And in fact, you know, as I've been reflecting on that whole time, and this really isn't an attempt to sanitize her, but I really can't think of a skill that Laura really did badly. Running, painting, carving pumpkins, writing, teaching, horse riding. Jenny, her horse, and Laura, together they were like a lock and a key. Having said that, you know, what could I say that's sort of realistic? She wasn't very good about washing up. And she did eat and cook some really disgusting things. So among the many things she initiated me into in American culture, there was Cheese Whiz and these really unappetizing cheese and chive dips. And arguably, there were also some downsides to her driving. But even then, it wasn't bad. It was just overly careful. So as a point of friendly contention, she absolutely refused to put her foot down, put her foot on the gas in this beautiful metallic blue Nissan ZX sports car, which her dad had bought her for cheap at an auction. But he'd told her that if she drove it over 55 miles an hour, then it would wear out the engine. And so this poor car, this amazing sports car, never got a proper workout. But even then, that wasn't even her fault. She was just trying to be, a pleasing and satisfying daughter. So when Laura left Tucson to embrace the opportunity of finishing her PhD on the East Coast with the renowned linguist Stephen Crane, she was so missed by me and by the Arizona crew of linguists. I decorated my new flat at the Diplomats with all the oil paintings that she left, so I had daily reminders of her. But she was finally flying free from Tucson, and of course then found the love of her life, Mike, at the University of Connecticut. And when I say love of her life, I really mean it. I won't elaborate further, but everyone who knew her back then remembers how profoundly she fell in love with Mike and continued to love him. Our lives moved on, completed PhDs, she did Teach America, the marriage, commuting to New Haven, her two beautiful sons, back surgery, fabulous work in a homeschooling movement. Those are just smattering of things. And after I moved to the East Coast for faculty positions, we still got to see each other. But the increased busyness of family life meant that it was sometimes only once a year, although we always made a point of it. And it was always as though we had just seen each other, because we could slip right back into the old familiarity, because Laura just kept warmth and kept you in her circle. And so she's so, so, so missed in ways I can't express. But on this day of celebrating her life, thank you, Laura, for being such a fabulous and deep friend, as well as being such an accomplished intellect and a wonderful and truly invested mum to Marcus and Jared, and of course, a fantastic partner to Mike. Again, you know, I wished I could be with you. I'm in London, but I am sending Laura level positive energy into the world. And this Sunday I'll raise my glass and I'm sending all my love, Mike, Marcus, Jared, Will, and family.